Flash Notes Podcast, episode number 8, The Charisma Myth by Olivia Fox Cobain. Welcome to the Flash Notes Podcast, the podcast for busy professionals that need knowledge now. Brought to you by Flash Notes Book Summaries at getflashnotes.com, where you can get best-selling business and self-improvement book summaries that you can read or listen to in under 20 minutes. My name is Dean Bukhari, your host here at the Flash Notes Podcast, where every week we work to bring you the big ideas and actionable insights from some of the best business and self-improvement books out there to help you succeed in life and in business. So tune in, buckle up, and enjoy the ride as we dive into today's episode right here on the Flash Notes Podcast. Hello there, this is Dean Bukhari, and I am coming back at you with another Flash Notes Audible book summary for you. And today we're going to be covering a book titled The Charisma Myth: How Anyone Can Master the Art and Science of Personal Magnetism, written by Olivia Fox Cobain. Now, the charisma myth essentially just defies the whole popular notion of charisma being this inherited gift or trait that we're born with. Instead, it argues, and in a very sound scientific way, that everyone can cultivate their own charisma. And in doing so, can have a more positive attitude, can find more success, and can handle obstacles in every arena of life. So what I want to do is just dive straight into these big ideas, because she provides us with some great tools, strategies, tips, tactics, and examples of charismatic people and how to identify what's our style, you know, which one can we sort of embody and what can we do to become more charismatic. So diving into the first idea here, which is simply that charisma is good for you. It makes for success in all areas of your life. Charismatic people have a greater impact on others. They're charming, they're persuasive, they're impressive, and all without any apparent effort. They seem to just do it. And they also seem to lead more successful lives in the process. Compared with the average person, charismatic people are more attractive, they're higher earners, and they're generally less stressed, at least on the outside. It's unsurprising then that charisma gives you an advantage in the business world. It gets people to like you, it gets people to trust you and to really just follow your leadership, whether you're applying for a new job or trying to get ahead in your own current position or career. It's going to be beneficial for you to become more charismatic. Charisma, cultivating this, can help you excel. Now, studies have revealed that the workplace performance of charismatic people is rated super high, very, very highly by their coworkers as well. One researcher observed that followers of charismatic leaders were strongly committed to their leader's mission, strongly committed to the idea of the direction of the company, and they were often exceeding their official duties and even making significant sacrifices within their personal lives to make sure that they were excelling and really just not letting the leader down, but rather doing the opposite and overperforming when they can to ensure that the mission is met. But charisma is beneficial not just in business. It's also helpful in other professions and in education. For example, charisma can help high school students perform brilliantly in college interviews or win student elections, for instance. It also helps them to become more socially confident. It helps people become more popular among their peers. As for professionals, charismatic academics find it much easier to get their research published and funded and to get to teach the courses that they want to, and they can become more charismatic. Similarly, charismatic physicians are very popular with their patients, who are more likely to follow their medical advice and less likely to sue should anything happen to go wrong. We can see the benefits of charisma outside the professional area as well. Stay-at-home moms, for example, must charm and influence all kinds of people, their kids, school teachers, and other community members. Charisma, then, is for everyone, not just for leaders, not just for business people. From stay-at-home moms to students to physicians, charisma can help everyone lead a happier, healthier, and more successful overall well-lived lifestyle. And the good news here is that anyone can be charismatic. How? Let's dive into it. The Charisma Myth: It's not inherited, but a set of behaviors which anyone can learn. Despite the popular charisma myth, people aren't born with charisma. No matter how naturally magnetic some people appear, it's not an inherent born trait. If such people were inherently charismatic, then without fail, they would always be captivating. But no one's charismatic around the clock. Some might even be utterly captivating one day, and then the next day be totally, totally boring. This is because charisma is not some kind of magical aura, but the result of a person displaying certain behaviors. These behaviors are nonverbal. They are body language. In any given moment we appear charismatic, it's because our body language is expressing charisma. We're congruent, and for that reason, our charisma levels fluctuate, right? A single person will sometimes be perceived as charismatic and other times the opposite. For example, consider the famously charismatic Marilyn Monroe, who was able to switch at will between her Marilyn and Norma Jean personas. On one occasion, Norma Jean, the alter ego, I suppose, of Marilyn Monroe, managed to ride the subway without passengers noticing her. The moment she reemerged on the New York streets, she transformed herself into Marilyn. How? Simply by changing her body language, adjusting her hairstyle, and striking a pose or two. All eyes were immediately on her. Why then is the charisma myth so popular? The reason is that we experience only the effect of a charismatic person. We only experience the effect of it, the impact of what they do. What we don't see, however, is the time and effort that people like this that have developed these qualities of charisma have put into learning these qualities. Many famously charismatic people worked hard to learn this behavior until it eventually became instinctive. One such person was Steve Jobs, cliche, who early on appeared very awkward during presentations. Over the years, though, he managed to gradually increase his charisma, eventually becoming the Steve Jobs that we admired, the man who kept audiences hanging on his every word, on every one more thing, waiting for it. As you can see, everyone can be charismatic simply by learning, simply by practicing, simply by refining the appropriate behaviors. We can all become charismatic. Next, let's look at some of those behaviors in detail. Charisma is, above all, again, body language. And this begins up here in your mind. Right in your mind. At every moment, you're unintentionally sending signals that are perceived subconsciously by those around you as your body language. The way that you move, the way that you gesture, the micro expressions on your face. Whether you like it or not, your body reveals your mental state. Anxiety, again, for example, produces a micro expression on your face, and observers will sense that something isn't right or is wrong. On the other hand, certain signals perceived by others as charismatic, and fortunately you can develop a mental state which will produce these signals, can really up your game in life and business. Now, since we can't consciously control every tiny little expression, we can't broadcast charismatic body language at will. For example, if you're genuinely happy, your smile kind of reflects that. If the outer corners of the mouth tend to rise when you're happy, then that happens. And the inner corners of the eyebrows tend to descend when you smile and when you're genuinely happy. But if you're not genuinely happy, you're going to smile with your mouth only. Your eyes won't express the happiness, and your smile will seem kind of fake. It'll be one of those social smiles. You know what I'm talking about. People have no difficulty in spotting the difference either. But we can't directly control our body language. How can we develop charisma if we can't directly control it? The solution is to indirectly control our body language by influencing the part of the mind that controls non-verbal signals. That is the subconscious part of your mind. Because our brains can't really differentiate imagination from reality, simply imagining a situation causes your brain to send your body the same commands as it would if that situation were actually real. This is huge. So if you create an internal charismatic state within yourself, your body language will actually display that charisma authentically. If you just run it back over and over and over again in your head, other people then in real life, when you actually start to do it, will see you as a charismatic person as a result of this. This is all happening in your mind's eye. This process is so similar to the well-known placebo effect. A placebo is a stimulated medical procedure, or a simulated medical procedure rather, where people are led to believe that they've received, you know, a medical intervention of some kind, when in fact they haven't. And this can have a positive effect because they think that they're actually getting the medicine, even though it's a sugar pill, for instance. Similarly, creating an internal charismatic state within yourself is going to cause you to behave charismatically. Creating the right internal state is critical to expressing charisma through body language, and it also accounts for the next key element of charisma: presence. Charisma requires presence, a skill that makes you stand out but is hard to achieve. Platform skills, some would call it. There are many, many ways to appear charismatic. But the main one, again, is presence, being aware of what's actually happening moment to moment around you, the people, the area, the environment, being very, very aware of those nuances. In social interactions, this means being with the other person completely and listening to them intently. This is so powerful and so important, but unfortunately, most people overlook it like crazy. If you're fully present with others, you will appear charismatic, and you'll be trustworthy. You'll generate the trust and rapport and loyalty that all of us want, not just from other people, but to give to other people as well. It's a mutually beneficial situation that you're creating when you're genuinely interested in another person. If you lack presence, the person you're connecting with or trying to connect with, the person that you're interacting with will likely notice. They might suffer emotionally as a result of that. As one person complained, interacting with someone who lacked presence made her feel resentful and made her feel inferior to whatever was more important to her than our conversation. Think about, for example, one of the things that sort of makes me quite sad when I see it out in restaurants. I see two couples sitting there at a table, and one person in the relationship is desperately trying to get their point across while the other person is texting underneath the table. It's a sad scenario, and it's likely that that relationship probably won't continue on. But anyways, be fully present. Being present is essential for charisma, but it is far from easy. It's not always easy. This is because our brains are wired to pay full attention to potentially important stimuli, like new sights, new sounds, new smells, the bing, the buzz, the flash from the phone. This inclination was the key component of what our ancestors were able to harness for their survival. This means that they were easily distracted and they were able to figure out how to harness those distractions to move their bodies quickly in case a dinosaur was trying to chase them down or something bigger than them was trying to eat them alive. They could use these chemicals that our bodies produce to their own benefit. Now, our society magnifies this problem by offering never-ending distractions, and the constant stimulation that we receive can lead to a state of continuous partial attention. That's partial attention, in which we can't attend fully to any one thing. So, one study found that almost half the average person's time was spent mind-wandering, thinking about something other than what they were doing in that moment. In fact, the only activity that kept people fairly focused on the task at hand was lovemaking. But if you can imagine to be present, if you can manage to do so, it will distinguish you from everybody else. Being present will distinguish you from the crowd. And people will feel special around you if you can be present around them. Just a 5-minute conversation with a stranger is enough to impress them and to establish a real genuine bond. People will sense that your full attention is there, it's present, they'll feel that in this moment that they are the most important thing in the world to you. The ability to be present here, this is what makes you so charismatic, that you can establish an emotional connection with another person in just 5 minutes, all by being present, by being genuine, by actually looking into their eyes, by caring about what they have to say. Next, let's start looking at how to master two of the key ingredients of charisma: power and warmth. Let's jump into the next big idea. Charisma means being powerful, and it means being warm, being willing to use your power for others. Human survival, again, to bring it back up, is something that's always been dependent on finding people who are both powerful as well as kind. In a dangerous situation, for instance, we need to determine which people might want to help us and have the power to actually do so. In the past, especially, finding such people has meant the difference between life and death. Imagine having a friend who was physically strong enough to rescue you from a saber-toothed tiger, right? Or having a king as your friend who could save you from execution. We subconsciously view the combination of power and warmth as extremely positive, so we look for signs of it in others and try to keep as friends those who possess these traits. In fact, the power-warmth combination is a necessary condition of charisma. Again, the power-warmth combination is a necessary condition of developing charisma. Someone powerful might not be, but not warm enough, might be impressive, but not necessarily charismatic, right? They might have the power, but they might not be warm. And in this regard, they could be impressive through fear and things of that sort by exercising and pushing their power on others, but they won't be charismatic because people won't necessarily like them. They might even appear arrogant or cold, and someone warm but not powerful might be likable but not charismatic. You catch that? Someone warm, now this is another example, somebody who's actually warm, has nice and kind characteristics to them, they might be warm but not powerful, and they could be likable but not charismatic. Rather, they could seem overeager and subservient. Compare, for example, the two candidates in Great Britain's 1868 elections, William Gladstone and Benjamin Disraeli. Two people who you may have heard of, both of whom projected power, intelligence, and knowledge. One woman who dined with each of them separately commented on how Gladstone had impressed her with his power, but seemed to lack warmth, while Disraeli projected presence and warmth in addition to power, making her, as his dining companion, feel special and fascinating. The woman later said that after dining with Mr. Gladstone, she said, "I thought he was the cleverest person in England, but after dining with Mr. Disraeli, I thought I was the cleverest person in England." No surprise, then, that Disraeli won the election. Displaying both power and warmth is key to being perceived as charismatic. Turning this into practice will depend on your personal charisma style, as discussed in the next big idea, which is there are several charisma styles. Everyone has to find the right one for themselves. Now, not all people are charismatic, at least not in the same way, and different situations require different kinds of charisma. There are four distinct charisma styles that I want to tell you about right now. Focus charisma, which is the first one, is what lets people know that you're fully present. A good example of this would be somebody like Bill Clinton. President Bill Clinton. The second is visionary charisma, and this inspires people to gets them to believe in something. This is someone like Steve Jobs. He did that a lot. The next type of charisma is kindness charisma. This makes others feel seen and accepted. If you look at somebody like the Dalai Lama, he'd be a great example of this. And then finally, there's authority charisma, and that makes others believe you have the power to change their lives. Okay, again, that's authority charisma, and that makes other people believe you that makes other people perceive that you have the power to change their lives. It'd be a better way to put it. And a great example of this would be somebody like Bill Gates. So how do you choose the right style for yourself? Well, this depends on three aspects: your personality, your goals, and the particular situation that you're in. When choosing a style, you don't want to go against your natural personality because this can be counterproductive. For example, in the 2004 US elections, John Kerry dumbed down his focused intellectual charisma in an attempt to be more accessible to people. And this backfired on him pretty badly. He alienated those who actually liked his original personality, and it made him appear disingenuous. So in terms of goals, consider how you want people to feel and respond to you. For example, if you're delivering bad news, kindness is the best choice. It makes the other person feel more comfortable about accepting the news. Using authoritarian in this situation, styles of authority, the type of style that's more dominant, rather, in this type of situation wouldn't necessarily work, because you'd probably appear arrogant or cruel. You can adapt styles to the situation by combining or alternating between them. Okay, that's mixing them up. This is a talent of highly charismatic people. If you decide to try out new styles, only do so in low-stake type situations where there's little to lose. For example, try expressing kindness at a low-profile networking event, but don't try out visionary charisma for the first time during an important presentation. So there's no one-size-fits-all type of charisma style. You have to find the one that suits you best. But whichever style you choose, there's one clear, foolproof way to appear charismatic. And that's what we're going to talk about in the next big idea. The most important part of being seen as charismatic is making the right first impression. Now, we all tend to remember the firsts, right? The first time we met someone, for instance, the first date we went on, the first kiss, the first job, the first this, the first that. This means first impressions are very, very important, especially as we only get one chance to make a great one. To make a great first impression, you have to make others feel that you're similar to them. This is matching and mirroring, building rapport. People that are like each other tend to like each other. Right, so people feel most comfortable with those people who have the similar ideals, traits, characteristics as they do. People who behave and appear as they do, because they assume that you have much in common with one another. Social background, education, values, things of that nature all come into play here. Now, Olivia Cobain, the author of the charisma myth, learned this the hard way when she wore a black business suit to a presentation at a casually attired firm and was explicitly told to lose the suit. Man, the same logic applies to your demeanor and your language. So for example, a financial analyst had difficulty relating to her boss, who was a blunt, military type of guy who used battle metaphors in conversation. Now, when she began to adopt the same militaristic language, speaking, for example, of loyal soldiers, their interactions quickly improved, believe it or not. Once you've made a favorable first impression on someone, it'll color the rest of the relationship. It'll pepper it with nice little sort of nuggets of mutual likeness. You know, it'll build rapport. This is because, as economist John Kenneth Galbraith believes, we seek to reaffirm our first impressions rather than revise them. And first impressions are often proven right. In one study, it was found that after looking at a single photograph, subjects could accurately judge most personality traits of the people depicted in the photographs. For example, their level of extroversion or their conscientiousness about other individuals, whether they were shy or whether they were outgoing. So begin that first meeting by complimenting the other person or asking an open-ended series of questions, for instance, and stick to positive subjects, trying to be agreeable when possible. When it's time to end the meeting, try again to leave the other person without any negative feelings, but with the opposite. Try to leave them with positive vibes, positive feelings. Finally, don't underestimate the handshake. It requires trust, so it's an important step in intimacy. For instance, if a CEO is faced with two equally strong candidates for a job, that handshake could be the deciding factor, right? So imagine, for instance, being in a situation where you've just closed a business deal with somebody and the other person who you've closed a deal with says, you reach your hand out, for instance, and you say, okay, let's shake on it, it's a deal. And the other guy that you're closing the deal with says, oh no, it's okay, I don't need to shake on it, I agree with all the terms, and I'm okay, I'll send over the paperwork. How would that make you feel, right? It'd make me feel pretty uncomfortable, that's for sure. And it's likely that something in that deal would fall through or you would feel uncomfortable about it because that social contract wasn't met. That handshake, that's how powerful a handshake is. So making a great first impression comes from paying attention to others, okay? So now let's talk about how to overcome some of the common obstacles in being charismatic. Being charismatic means overcoming mental and physical discomfort. Feeling discomfort, whether physical or mental, can affect your performance and your emotions as well as others' perception of you. Being hungry, for example, will probably cloud your thinking, and low blood sugar can impair your attention and emotional control. If that discomfort is visible in your body language, it can affect how charismatic you appear to be. Consider Tom, an example of a consultant whose choice of clothing for a meeting with a client almost lost him a $4 million deal. Tom wore a black wool suit, but the day of the meeting was so hot and Tom was sitting in direct sunlight just beaming down on him. He spent the meeting fidgeting with his collar and squinting against the sun and sweating like a dog, behavior which, in the client's eyes, looked like anger and disapproval and insecurity. Naturally, the client began to doubt Tom's abilities. Crazy stuff, huh? Mental discomfort, such as anxiety or self-criticism, can have the same effect. Tom had spent the lead-up to his meeting reeling as he considered its possible outcomes. He was excited. Unsurprisingly, he became anxious, and this showed in his body language. People generally don't handle uncertainty very, very well. They don't handle uncertainty well at all. It makes us tense. It stops us from being present, both of which harm our charisma drastically. So here are three quick ways to counteract discomfort. Prevent, recognize, and remedy. Okay, prevent, recognize, remedy, or explain. Prevent means to ensure your comfort by planning ahead of time. In Tom's case, he could have chosen a venue more appropriate for a business meeting and clothing that better suited the climate, right? To recognize relates to being present. The more present you are, the more aware of your body language you'll be. If Tom were fully present, he would have recognized his behavior looked sketchy and suspicious and shady. And the more aware you are, the easier it is to remedy or explain the problem. When the sun hit Tom's eyes, he could have paused to ask whether they could move the seats, explaining that the sunlight was bothering him. We didn't do that. By identifying and overcoming the obstacles of discomfort, you can take an important step towards being more charismatic, even in situations that would basically contribute to your downfall, like Tom. Another great way to deal with obstacles, especially emotional ones like self-criticism and shame, is to de-dramatize. Again, that's de-dramatize, and that's what we're going to talk about in the next big idea. To de-dramatize is really about what's happening isn't serious. It's not that serious, and lots of other people are going through the same thing. That's what it means to de-dramatize something. When you're feeling internal discomfort or negativity, both obstacles to charisma, remember that you're not alone in the experience and that what's happening isn't really that serious. This is de-dramatizing, and it involves interpreting a negative emotion in a way that reduces its impact. This is what Michael, a consultant, did when he felt sure that a client was about to end their relationship. He convinced himself that nothing serious was happening by imagining that he was simply a physical being with certain chemicals flooding his system. Another way to de-dramatize is to imagine the negative emotion that is being experienced by a community of people rather than just you alone. It's a shared feeling of negative emotion that's experienced by everybody. Doing this is going to relieve you a little bit, as Olivia suggests, the author of this book, as you'll realize that it's not wrong to think or feel as you do right now. Other people feel the same way also. Think about people who have already been through what you're going through or a similar experience, especially those that you admire, and trust that they experienced the same thoughts and feelings as you did. You can overcome it as well. De-dramatizing can help with an emotion that is particularly damaging to charisma as well, and that is shame. When you're ashamed, you do not appear charismatic, do you? As your body language isn't necessarily projecting power in that particular moment. It's not projecting warmth in that moment or presence in that moment. Imagine how terrible, how much it sucks to feel shame. Put simply, shame is the intense, fear-based feeling that we're flawed or that we don't deserve love. And this feeling causes us to fear that we'll be excluded by those people that we find most important to us, right? To display charisma, it's crucial for us to remove the stigma of shame from our difficult emotions and experiences. Just de-dramatize by remembering that shame is just a normal part of human experience and that everyone feels it at some point in time. Again, de-dramatizing is a great, great way to prevent negative feelings from damaging your potential for charisma. And in this next big idea here, we're going to talk about two more techniques: destigmatizing and neutralizing. To destigmatize and neutralize means that negative thoughts are nothing to feel bad about, and that they are not necessarily real at all. Overcoming internal discomfort can be achieved by destigmatizing and by neutralizing negativity. Again, it's destigmatizing and neutralizing negativity. Experiencing internal discomfort and negativity is a natural part of human life. All of us experience it, even for the most balanced people in the world. Consider that even devout Buddhist monk like Dalai Lama or someone like a Buddhist monk named Han, Think Not Han, was once so infuriated by someone that he felt like he wanted to punch him. Okay, this is a Buddhist monk, a devout Buddhist monk that we're talking about here that was given an example of this book. This shows that everyone, even Buddhist monks, are capable of experiencing the entire spectrum of emotions. Yet once we've become used to reading any physical or mental discomfort as an indication that someone's wrong, we feel that negative thoughts and emotions shouldn't be happening, thus making them even more difficult to deal with. The solution here, again, is to destigmatize. That is, to remind yourself that such discomfort is normal and it's merely a byproduct of our survival mechanisms that we're naturally programmed with. Another way to overcome discomfort like this is to neutralize your negativity by realizing that your thoughts are not real. They're not necessarily accurate. For example, if we feel bad because someone has reacted negatively to us, we should consider that the reaction might have nothing whatsoever to do with us, that the person could be struggling to manage their own physical or mental discomfort. And the reason we're so affected by our negative thoughts is that we believe our minds perceive reality accurately. But in fact, our minds do not give us a complete and accurate image of what reality actually is. Instead, we perceive only the small amount of information that's most relevant and most important to us. So remember, to destigmatize, one, and neutralize negative thoughts, second. Now think back and remember Tom, the consultant whose choice of clothing led to him spending so much of an important meeting just fidgeting around and looking like a sweaty, shady sketchball inside of the meeting. Now, the client mistakenly interpreted that Tom's body language as if it were a series of negative emotions, when in fact it was just discomfort caused by the environment, right? So the next time you make a mistake, feel negative, or if you feel like you're experiencing discomfort of some kind, just remember that it's a normal part of daily life. Remind yourself that your mind isn't always giving you accurate information about reality. So destigmatize and neutralize. Negative thoughts are nothing to feel bad about, and they're not necessarily real. Let's talk about some of the overcoming of internal discomfort. Let's talk about some of these internal discomfort situations that arise. Now, you can overcome internal discomfort by destigmatizing and neutralizing negativity again as well. Experiencing internal discomfort and negativity is a natural part of human life. So keep that again in mind as we close it out with the key message from the charisma myth, which is that every single one of us can be charismatic. All we need to do is get into a suitable mindset so that we display the right body language and practice this until it becomes instinctive, right? Until it becomes a part of us. And so there are various different ways and styles to choose from. So make sure that you select the style of charisma that best suits your personality and your situations on a day-to-day basis. Also, don't worry if you feel mental and physical obstacles that you run, if you run into these obstacles while you're developing your charisma, that's okay. Everyone ends up running into these situations. Even successful people experience these things as well. So simply apply the three steps to overcoming these obstacles when it happens. De-dramatize, destigmatize, and then neutralize. And finally, let's jump into just a couple of actionable insights from these notes from the charisma myth. And that is visualization being the first one here, which involves imagining yourself physically and performing an activity that you are nervous about or feel like you lack charisma within, and imagine yourself, visualize yourself doing it successfully. This can be done at home, it can be done in public, it can be done at work. It requires you to create nothing more than a vivid mental image of a triumphant experience in order to experience your feelings at that time. For example, a ski team could visualize themselves careening through the entire course, feeling their muscles tensing and experiencing each bump and turn, right? They make it real. They experience the process and they experience the end, the joy of finishing it, right? The outcome. So the next key tip insight here that you can act on is rewriting reality. When experiencing anxiety, you want to try using the rewriting reality technique suggested by Olivia Cobain. For example, if you have an important presentation tomorrow and you're anxious about the outcome, take a minute to imagine. Take a minute, list a few alternative outcomes ranging from the presentation going smoothly to it failing completely, right? Describe your way of speaking, what the audience looked like, their reaction to you, and so on and so forth. As the list grows, your anxiety should actually subside because you'll know the best case scenario, you'll know the worst case scenario. Lean towards the best, but be prepared for the worst. This exercise enables you to get into a mental state that's conducive to better performance, to helping you perform optimally. And the technique can also be very, very effective because the brain's tendency, again, to confuse imagination and reality, right? So blur those lines. And that is it for the flash notes on the charisma myth. Thank you so, so, so very much for listening, and I will talk to you on the next one. If you enjoyed today's episode of the Flash Notes podcast, we would greatly appreciate it if you took just a minute or so to review our podcast in iTunes. And if you're interested in learning more about Flash Notes book summaries, come on over to getflashnotes.com. Again, that's getflashnotes.com. And you can sign up for $1 and get access to business and self-improvement book summaries that you can read or listen to in under 20 minutes. Thanks again for listening. My name is Dean Bukhari, and I will see you on the next episode right here on the Flash Notes podcast.